247, I don't stand a chance getting to sleep tonight.
Hi, this is Tiffany the Lass and Pirate Nick and guest Pirate Clark, and we're at Halter Ranch. We just had a private concert with Jim Brown. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing?
It was a great show, thank you. We've been listening to your music for years, and it was finally really nice to sit and hear it live. And we've heard that you've been playing since you were in second grade, is that true?
I think it was third grade. I think my dad got me into a fourth grade guitar class, and he had some clout there, so I got to get into the fourth grade class, and I, you know, kept playing from then. I didn't play straight through, but, you know, there were gaps in that, but I've been playing pretty much since I was about, I don't know, nine, maybe? So 40 years, doesn't seem like it, but it's been about 40. Close to 40 years, yeah.
Now, was it always guitar, or did you learn other instruments as well?
I started playing drums. And I was in the band, the school band and the orchestra, and later in middle school, what now is middle school, I played in the jazz band with a great guitarist named Steph Burns, or Steph Birnbaum, that some people might know. And I played a little bit as a freshman, we started to get high school rock bands together, and that's when I learned that I'd rather be out front. So I did some singing with just, you know, just fronting, and then I was learning my chops on the guitar so I could play rhythm stuff with the band.
What was the kind of music that you were listening to when you were starting to, you know, think about getting into the front man role of music? Who was inspiring you in that time?
I think the first song that we really got down was Rebel Rebel with David Bowie. But, you know, I was into big time into that Lou Reed Rock and Roll Animal album and anything Lou Reed. I think I had a mad crush on him or something. And at the same time, I was a big Allman Brothers fan and Marshall Tucker fan and that sort of thing, too. Not so much Lynyrd Skynyrd, but some of the other Southern rock stuff and classic rock. I grew up with two older brothers in the house, so there were Cream albums and Hendrix albums and Love albums and, you know, whatever. It was all there. And an older sister with the kind of the more folk thing with Laura Nero and Carole King and Bob Dylan and Van Morrison and the band and all that. I think the first concert I saw was Bob Dylan and the band in 1975 at Oakland Auditorium, something like that.
Wow.
It was a great show, too.
And who took you to that?
My sister took me.
Oh. And what did you think, Clark, when your son started playing in bands in high school? Some parents worry about that. What were you thinking?
No, that didn't bother me at all. But I think Jim was a little modest about his early days. I remember when he was in a rhythm band when he was in the second grade. Mm-hmm. He probably has forgotten that. And then, yes, he was a drummer in later on in school, in the fourth grade. And the school district he was in had a great music program. And so in the summer, they had these honor bands. And he was a fourth grader in the honor band for up through the sixth grade. And the night they were going to have a concert, the older kids didn't show up. So he had... As a fourth grader, he had to take over and do the drum solo.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it was a timpani
solo.
It was a tick-tock clock thing or something, but at least he did it.
Yeah.
So he's always been quite innovative and quite ready to take over whenever there was something that challenged him.
You mentioned in your set tonight that you have a new guitar that you've been playing for 2 months, I think. How's that going?
Well, it's an Eastwood Resonator, a Delta 6, and I have had some Dobros and an old National for a while, and I've just kind of, you know, tinkered around on them. But I think this guitar, when I wrote the song without a sound, it allowed me to, you know, I just, instead of trying to play the guitar as a blues, you know, like a blues slide or something, I just wrote the song and just happened to play it on that guitar. So, you know, it came in that way. It was an open tuning and all that sort of thing. But I think now when I play that guitar, I don't think of it so much that I have to play a certain way, you know, that I have to play kind of blues slide. Like right now I'm thinking I can play just about anything. It's got some interesting overtones and it makes some really great sounds.
So what was your first band?
It was basically a friend of mine that I met in high school that I continued on up into probably 1997 or 98. So from 74 through 97, I pretty much had a kind of a partnership with this friend of mine when I was in the States. And then there's the whole, you know, expatriate thing where I probably played the most when I was in Curacao, living in Curacao and teaching at an international school. And I ran into the Caribbean Wild Romance, which was Herman Brood's band when he came from the Netherlands to Curacao, which is a Dutch and the Netherlands Antilles. And I was a big fan of Herman Brood with Saturday Night. I don't know if you've ever heard that song. It actually got some play in the States back on KSAN. And it was a really good song. And so I knew who he was, and it was pretty cool to be playing with this band. And so every kind of chubby checker type of guy that was in Holland would come and play in Curacao. Oh. We were their backup band.
Like, oh, yeah?
Cool. Hey to Koolerain and Rob de Nice. And I never did get to play with Herman Brood, though. That's the one that mattered to me.
I've got an interesting anecdote about his days in Curacao. I think it was every year they had some kind of a competition, and Jim decided he was going to participate in it as a vocalist. But there was a girl there also, young woman, who was very good. So rather than to compete, they worked out this deal. If I win, I'll split the prize with you.
And I won. I had to give her half the money.
Aww.
He won and had to give half the money to her.
I also took the middle school. I was an elementary teacher, but I took the middle school, a couple kids, and we entered made a band. They had a drummer, and these two kids were at the school. So we had a nice little band. And I jokingly said, oh, you know, let's call the band Free Beer. And they took it to heart, so they called the band Free Beer. And, you know, that didn't go over well with the administration. But that year, the island had a Battle of the Bands, and we won that, and we hosted the next year, which was pretty cool.
Oh, cool.
So now, and then from Curacao, you went to Lithuania. Correct? Your teaching took you to Lithuania. So tell us about how your musical career changed when you went over there.
Well, I had just started to record, and I did some recording in Curacao, and that was kind of like an EP, half a CD, and I took that with me to Lithuania in Vilnius. And when I got there, I hooked up with some local musicians. I went to found out where the blues band was playing, and then went in and asked if I could sit in. And when I sang and played, they wanted, you know, the next thing they were grabbing me and taking me everywhere, which was great. I got to mentor a lot of bands, and I got to play with some fabulous musicians. They were all classically trained, just impeccably good, and it was like a family. It wasn't anything like here, you know, where it's kind of dog eat dog. We all played in each other's bands. We all sat in with each other. You know, we put stuff together for this or that, or if it was just to make money or to play at a certain festival or go town to town. So I was, Lithuania was a couple years past the revolution. Everyone was in a great spirits. You know, it was before the shock economics took effect. And so the whole country was on a high. They were all, it was like a big party.
It was interesting too, because I saw one of his concerts, and it was in a club, and the same thing in the States would have been everybody talking, nobody really listening. Mm-hmm. There, everybody was quiet. Oh. They just liked the music, mm-hmm. and they respected the music and the musicians. That was the thing they were there for, to hear, not as that's something else in the background to fill in sound or something.
I was the only American playing music there. And some nights it would just be a drunken throwdown, you know, we'd be up there playing, and I talked people into keeping the bars open later. Said, you're throwing out a bar full of, you know, you're throwing 200 customers out the door that want to stay and spend their money at 11 o'clock. Why are you doing that? So eventually they kind of got to where they were staying open till 1, and I'll take credit for that. And sometimes, you know, it would just be a big party, and other times I'd look out and I was being studied. It was kind of creepy, you know. It wasn't creepy, but it was, I thought, they're studying me, you know, but I was the only one there, and they didn't really have the innate ability to sing rhythmically, you know, because their folk tradition is kind of atonal almost. It's really out there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Lithuania isn't.
It's kind of like that.
You don't think of Lithuania as a big blues place. How did it surprise you when you went over there and there were so many people taken by blues?
It did, and it surprised me how good they were. You know, they argued over stuff that I wouldn't even think about playing blues, you know. Whatever works, you know, is the way I look at it. And you know, they would get smuggled in CDs and stuff to listen to, and it would get passed around. And there was one guy who had a big library, and, you know, we weren't sure whether he was KGB or not, because he had all this stuff that nobody was supposed to have. And he had connections to every single musician in the whole city. Hmm. So, I mean, it would have made perfect sense that he was KGB, because he was also one of the loudest anti-KGB people, you know, so that tells you something there. Anyway, they were so good. I mean, they copied the masters, and they copied them note for note, and not just, they weren't just playing, you know, they could, you know, some of the guitar work on my latest CD, which is a compilation of everything I did overseas, uh-huh. has some really tasty guitar work on it that it's not mine. You know, it's the work of some of these Lithuanians, of Vladimir Kaplan. It's one of them. Funny, they used to call him China. He didn't even look Chinese, but to him, he looked Chinese. I guess he had a little Mongol in him. He had an old Gibson Deluxe with the little mini humbuckers on it, and he was always playing with the truss rod. But the guy had some really tasty chops, and I guess he still does, hopefully. A couple of the guys I played with are dead. They are not with us anymore, but I'm sure there's a few that are still out there.
So when did you come back to the States?
I came back to the States in 97, I think in the spring of 97. Stayed with Pops Brown here for a while, and getting situated, looking for jobs, looking for a place to, you know, a place to live.
And what happened with the musical career at that point?
Well, at that point, we actually had a new CD I was playing under the name Forgotten Sister with my old friend from high school. And we had a press kit, we had a CD, we had a pretty good band together. And tragically, my friend died. about a year after that happened. So then, at that point, nothing really kind of happened for me for about, I don't know, about 7 years. I did some writing in there, and that's kind of what brings us to where I'm at now. I'm just, it was kind of a hard period for me. I struggled a little bit with substance abuse and alcoholism, and then just getting clean. It took a few years. I'm in my fourth year now. It took a little bit of time just to kind of get back on my feet and get my facilities back and start writing again and decide which direction I wanted to go. So I kind of decided that since I didn't have a band and it seemed like such a hard thing to do to get a band together, I just started playing solo because I'd done a little bit of that, but not a whole lot.
One thing you mentioned at the concert tonight was that your voice has changed over the 10 years since you were singing, and you've had to adjust a lot of your songs.
Right.
So, because of that. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, my voice has gotten lower, and my range has dropped. I can't hit some of the high notes that I did on the couple songs on the CDs. And I've just found that, you know, I've discovered the capo, and I'm a slow learner. So what can I say? It took me this long to discover the capo, and now I'm learning all these fancy things that you can do with the capo. And it's one of the problems I had was that I'd write a song, and I liked the way it sounded. I liked the particular phrasings that was in it. It'd have a certain ring or something. But it wouldn't be necessarily the best key for me to sing in. But, I just kind of force it. And now that I've kind of learned to work with the capo, if I can't hit a high note or if I feel more comfortable in another key, I can just slap the capo on and I'm there.
That's what you were putting on the top of your guitar tonight?
It basically what it does is it shortens the neck.
Oh, okay.
So, if you're playing a bar chord, it takes it just creates the first finger so you can play. Say if I was playing a song in G, I can put the capo on the second fret and still play in G, but I'm in the key of A all of a sudden.
Oh.
And it's a really nice sound to me. Something changes in the instrument. It seems like in certain instruments, when you shorten the neck up and I don't know. It's easier to play, too, because the strings are a little bit lower. Because the nut becomes the fret, which is lower than the nut. So I'm learning a lot of stuff with the drop D, kind of a fake drop D. I've got that song Without a Sound that uses that. Kissed you there where you lay before they zipped you up and took you away. Thoughts crashing round in my brain, you in the eye of a hurricane. You left without a sound, could you feel it all coming unwound? I try to figure out what I'm feeling. All I can tell you is I'm still reeling.
You should see his. He had a garage built a few years ago, a new garage, but a car has never been in it.
It's a studio.
We built it.
Well,
you were there.
The whole family got involved in building it, actually, but what he ended up doing was making it a studio, and it's absolutely loaded with junk. It's not junk from his point of view, but from mine, it's technology. He's got more damn stuff in there than you can imagine. I don't know how he ever gets to use it all.
Recording?
Well, there's outboard gear for recording, and there's a computer in there, and there's a lot of, just cables and this, and amplifiers. Mostly what's in there is amplifiers and guitars and a drum set. And
it fills up the whole garage.
It fills up the whole thing, but it's amazing that it all fits in there, and you can still move around and play. I can probably get three people comfortably playing in there.
That's good.
Okay. So are you doing multi-track recordings where you're playing the drums and the guitar? And
well, that's what I'm aiming towards. It took me a long time to figure out what software to use or which way to go with the recording. I had a big Roland digital audio workstation with, like, you know, I think it was an 1824 or something model. There were five manuals. I never even recorded a stereo track on it. It just sat there collecting dust. I sold that, and I didn't want to go the Pro Tools route, so I went with Sonar, with the Cakewalk, and it's real easy. Still trying to work out how to get the, you know, how to play along, how to monitor everything so I can play the drums and have that in time. It's just, you know, it's like what's going to work for me. It's just a matter of time before I can start putting the extra tracks on. And then I figure that'll be my band. I'll just play all the parts and maybe ask someone to come in and drop a bass line in here and there.
What's it like? Because have you always played in a band in the past? Is this the first time you've gone on your own solo?
Once I played one solo gig in Lithuania, and it was pretty funny because, you know, I just brought down the set list. I was just going to just play that stuff. I brought down the set list. And so I'm playing solo in this club. It was a state club. And it's 15 minutes later, I'm through my first set. And then another 15 minutes, I'm done with the second set, you know. All these songs that end up being 5 minutes in a band are like a minute and 45 seconds in the solo guitar. Yeah. And I found out the hard way, you know, so I had to really scramble after that. But that was quite a while ago. And then I just figured, well, I'll do the singer-songwriter thing. And it seemed to be kind of a bit more popular than it had been in the past before I left the States. Seemed the obvious route to go.
And do you enjoy playing solo?
I do enjoy it, but it's a lot of work. You know, I'm still kind of polishing up, getting some rough edges off. It's a lot more responsibility. You can't kind of sit back and, you know, let someone else go. There's a lot to do. You got to learn how to be an entertainer. So you got to have, you know, your little stories, and you got to have, you know, you got to remember, you know, am I using the capo on this song? And am I using the, you know, drop D on this song? And what key is this one in? You know, I was a mess normally just getting up in front of people. I'd just really be so nervous. And, you know, I'm getting better at that. And I can see myself, you know, learning all the little banter and throwing some stories in there. And I'm working on that. But it's a lot of work. It's not just learn your part and play it.
Kind of like you need a little skit going on.
Yeah, it's not like you can just slot into the song. You gotta be the song, and you gotta be everything else. All the production, all the promotion, everything is. It's just an incredible amount of work.
When did New Old Stock come out?
New Old Stock, I put together, you know, after I had a lot of material from Forgotten Sister and some other studio work I'd done overseas. And, you know, I thought, I hate to see all this work just kind of sit around and just sit there. And there was no way I was going to bring out Forgotten Sister CDs with me. You know, I'm trying to come out as, I don't even know what name I want to come out under. I mean, James Brown, what do you do with that? You know, right. So, I mean, he used to call me Red Boss, and I'm thinking, Jay Brown is the, on the CD. So, I've got issues. Anyway, I just got everything together that I had recorded, and I picked what I thought was the best and most representative of what I had done. And, you know, there's a lot of new things that have come out, and I've learned about doing the computer recording, like all the plugins and stuff that you can do. So I ran it through SoundForge, and I did some editing, and I did a little this and that, and sent some stuff out, and I just to kind of get it all matched up, and I put it together in a compilation I call New Old Stock, and I guess Jay Brown and Lost Company, because I think there's five of the people that used to were playing on that are no longer with us. So I called it Lost Company. Couldn't think of anything else.
Where do you see yourself playing next year?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out where the venues are, but, you know, there's the Hotel Utah and San Francisco and the Red Vic. And maybe, if I get lucky, maybe like Café du Nord or places like the Canvas, Freight and Salvage in Berkeley, Starry Plow. I guess that's, you know, it. I'd like to hook up with someone, you know, and be opening for someone that's playing, mm-hmm. you know, maybe opening for a band. I don't know, I'm friends with some of the Alexis Hart band, and that might be a good fit, but, you know, we'll see.
And just go out solo. I heard you saying that you play harmonica, too.
Yeah.
So would you play all of those?
I'm kind of looking at I'm thinking that, you know, as a singer songwriter, you got a lot of the same tempo and a lot of the same key, or you're within, you know, pretty close to each other, and to break it up, I'm thinking, I'm a pretty strong blues singer, and you know, I could do a mini blues set, and I could do a little slide set. I could get the harmonica holder out and do the mm-hmm. you know, do all that, and then do the other stuff. Just do the straight guitar and voice.
So, have you got many of those songs written? The new stuff?
Yeah, I have plenty of stuff written now that hasn't been recorded. But most of the stuff I played tonight, well, only a few of those are on anything. I'm kind of waiting to see where, you know, who I'm going to be as far as a musician in the next year when I get this stuff that's done now. But I'm a completely different person now than I was 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything I wrote before that was either about people who've died or people I know that are messing up, or about my own struggles. So every song has that theme running through it. And so that, you know, it's not all, I'm trying to move towards, well, I'm hoping that I'm not writing, you know, everything so subjective, you know, maybe try to get outside of myself a little bit and write from there.
I'll give you 5 more minutes to feel sorry for yourself. Then you're gonna have to get your head out of the past and your heart off the shelf. Walking around with your head hanging down, but you're still walking around. Well, you know and I know and everyone else knows, to be underground.
The good times. All right, James Brown, Jim Brown, Jim. Jay Brown, whatever it's going to be.
Red Ball. I don't know. Who knows?
Thanks,
Jim Lumpur. James.
Thanks for chatting with us. And, you know, we like to ask everybody at the end of the interview to give us their best part. Or however you
want
to do it.
You could join
us.
Arr!
And
Pirate Clark, do you want to give an R?
Jim's dad.
Give us an R.
Give us an R. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.